Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three questions that we've been hearing from international educators this past week in comments on LinkedIn, in the news, and related to what is happening in our field. For those who are new to the Roundup, I want to say thank you for joining us live. And this is a chance each week on Wednesday after we're getting to the middle of the week and looking forward to what's to come, but also taking a chance to reflect on some of the key issues. And each week we take a look at three important questions that we're hearing in the industry. And what we do is we produce a newsletter here at SMIE Consulting called All the SMIE News Fit to Share, and that stands for Social Media and International Education News. And we put out this newsletter on Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern, comes free to your inbox if you subscribe, and we'll be dropping the link to the latest edition of the newsletter in the comments section here on the Facebook page, and invite you to subscribe if you're not already. We also want to thank those that are listening on podcast. We're available, this Roundup is available on all major podcast feeds from Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. So thanks again for those that are making us a part of your routine each week. Let's get started with the three questions that we have today. First up is there's yet another executive order from the White House related to international things. This first one is really the expansion of immigration restrictions that this administration has been implementing over the past 4 years almost now. But it does not, thankfully, it spared OPT from the latest order in terms of restrictions that were rumored to be coming down the pike for that invaluable international education program for international students that finish degrees here in the U.S. Did, however, will impact universities with regard to the suspension of J-1 programs for researchers, professors, and a number of other short-term scholars, nannies, as well as the au pair piece, as well as camp workers and those type of things. All of the summer industries that have relied heavily on the J-1 program for exchange students to come and work for them for the summer, those programs have all been shut down until the new year, at least. So the current administration has made many attempts to say that these restrictions also impact H-1B, which is interesting to see. It doesn't impact current H-1Bs, but prevents new H-1B visas from being issued through the beginning of 2021. So there's real uncertainty that this causes, as with many things that this administration does, that it's under the guise of this is designed to protect the American worker who's been ravaged by the impact of COVID-19 on the economy. And the reality is this is not having anything to do with that. It's more red meat for the president's base, who is so vehemently anti-immigrant that there's just no room for even the best of us seemingly maintaining any hope that this country in its current form is as welcoming as it once was. So that's the proclamation is officially titled Proclamation Suspending Entry of Aliens Who Present a Risk to the U.S. Labor Market Following the Coronavirus. Now this is outbreak, and this is really something that just eats at your heart for anyone who's in international education, and a risk to the U.S. labor market. These are people that that are coming, and perhaps the real reality of it, a lot of these summer jobs that students would be coming into to work They aren't, those industries aren't able to operate at full capacity now anyway because of the restrictions that are in place. So it may be a non-starter in terms of its real impact on that level. But for institutions, frankly, and let's talk specifically about institutions here that enroll or hire professors, researchers from overseas, there's an extensive vetting process that these go through that there has to be documentation that that this is the international candidate that's hired on an H-1B for as a professorship or a researcher is the best available candidates, and that there were no other better qualified American candidates. That process has existed for decades, and it's one that is an onerous process, and it's not cheap. The institution is the one that has to fund, typically in most cases, the H-1B applicants, $3,500 to $4,000 a piece, depending on the legal team that you have on board to do that. So it really is a challenge that that this population for H-1B new staff, new hires at institutions. H-1B is, universities have been exempt from the H-1B cap that exists out there for typically corporate employees. So they've enjoyed that benefit for many years, and that's now gone through any new fall hires. Forget about it from overseas. It's not going to happen on an H-1B. Or a J-1 researcher or scholar, they're not going to be able to enter in either for the fall. And you also see that it also impacts L1s. In fact, my dad, when he first came to the United States in 1974 and brought us, brought the family along, he was an L1 intercompany transfer. So that's not taking any U.S. job because it's a job that's a company deciding to transfer an employee from overseas location to a U.S. location. So there's really very little cover on this in this executive order being anything other than another immigration blow to those that are seeking to come here legally and have a better life. And the premise that it's a risk to the U.S. labor market is as a result of coronavirus is bogus, because these are jobs that only these people are qualified for. The reason why we're still not out of the woods yet for OPT changes, because that may be coming again soon. There's the threat is there that those students, after they finish degrees that apply for these jobs, are getting, particularly STEM jobs, are displacing U.S. workers, and that's clearly not the case. Of course, the pandemic will be used as cover for that as well if that happens. So it's really not so much a surprise that it's almost here. For those that are looking for a useful article that kind of explains from an institutional level what this most recent executive order does not or does and doesn't allow U.S. institutions to do, there's a great article from Harvard University's perspective. U.S. visa suspensions threaten scholarly exchange and engagement at Harvard, and it's Harvard's perspective. So it's a decent article, fairly short, but it gives you will give you a sense of what a prominent institution is, how they're viewing this particular issue. Now, this is kind of in the larger scope of things. We see, I mentioned earlier, the immigration attacks that the current administration has taken and policy changes it's made, executive orders it's issued to restrict legal immigration, not just illegal immigration, into the United States. And that's the net effect of that has been shown recently in a National Foundation for American Policy brief that looked at specifically Indian students at the graduate level in computer science and engineering, so two of the most important STEM fields, that looked at the trends of their enrollment in U.S. programs. And the fall is just staggering. It's over 25% in between 2017-18 and 2018-19. And that decline is seen in terms of the volume. Where that has gone, it's gone primarily to Canada. Canada has been a real beneficiary. Indian students are the number one source of of international students in Canada, and they have certainly reaped the benefit of the less welcoming face of U.S. higher education, U.S. immigration policy, I should say, over the last 4 years. And that's a PDF doc I'm dropping the link to in the comments section as well. And that's certainly something that, as you try and make the case on your campus for better advocacy efforts related to OPT to help keep that that protected. We're not out of the woods on that yet, and we certainly, as part of the larger advocacy efforts we need to be doing as international educators, hopefully that's part of what you're thinking, where your plans involve. Now, shifting gears to another ban that's been put in place over the last week, and that is one that had been rumored for a week or so, but has finally been announced, that the European Union is barring American travelers as it reopens their borders. They've also been on relatively significant lockdowns in terms of travel between countries, but as they're beginning to open up to travelers from outside the EU, there are now very significant restrictions. The article that I'm posting is one from New York Times last week. There's an updated one that just came out this morning, if not last night, that spells out what categories of visitors from around the world are part of this ban. And it does target Russia, it does target the U.S., it does target Brazil, major hotspots for COVID-19 at present. And that is resulting in some real wrenching of hands among international educators. The good news is, it wasn't mentioned in this initial Times article that I'm referencing today, but in the most recent one that came out this morning, they have excluded students from that ban. So study abroad potentially can still happen from the U.S. to European destinations in the fall. So that's encouraging, at least on that part of international education. However, what is part of the ban is business travel. And certainly U.S. institutions that were expecting to have standard recruitment tours or do recruitment events in Europe this fall, forget about it. It's not happening. This is confirming that. Of course, these bans can be altered and adjusted with countries coming on and off the list as outbreaks either quelled or pop up. But certainly right now, as it is, U.S. International admissions folks won't be traveling this fall to recruit in Europe unless you already have a EU passport, which would then allow you to access those countries legally. You may have quarantine, though, requirements if you're coming from the U.S. That may still be the case. So travel, frankly, recruitment travel is not happening on almost all levels this fall. So what we'll talk about in future episodes is, when you can't travel, what do you need to be doing? That's part of what I've been advocating for years, is to have a robust digital international recruitment strategy for your institution. But we'll talk about some of those elements in later episodes, I'm sure. But this ban is a new reality for international education, part of the impact of COVID-19 on our world, on not only our industry, but how we live our lives and how we travel, how we interact. It's all being coming down to these things and how our our government and individual states have responded to the COVID-19 crisis does have an impact on our ability as a country to function in a global market. And that's a sad reality that we're all facing right now. That's because of the hot spots that have flared up in the south of the U.S. and some other states, we're now seeing the world reaction be quite negative towards us in terms of our handling of this. Whether it's federal blame or state blames or however you want to look at it, the problem is we're not handling our stuff well right now. And that's maybe an understatement of the year, but we certainly have real impacts of our handling as a country of the coronavirus pandemic, and its impact. It can impact us in many ways that we might not have originally foreseen. So we'll keep an eye on this travel ban story and update you as needed as the days and weeks progress. Now, the final story we're taking a look at this week is an article in The Hill. I've gotten some interesting reaction to it when I posted this just yesterday, I think it was. This came out on my feeds. And some of the comments were, yes, thank you. Yeah, it's about time we focus not on the financial piece in terms of the benefit for U.S. Institutions in our country, but this article is losing our competitive edge. Is not just about international students, it's about us as well. And it focuses, thankfully, and from my perspective, appropriately, on the other side of the coin for what benefit international students bring to us as a nation. And I've had some comments talk about, well, it's these kind of stories have been written for years, and it's very U.S. focused. And it's like, well, of course it is. It's a U.S. publication. But the reality is there are many benefits to international students coming, not only for our country financially and, as this article points out, culturally for our own students and preparing them for the world outside ours. There's benefits for those that graduate from our institutions with high-quality education that return home, take the knowledge and skills that they've learned and apply them to helping their countries improve. But it's also a public diplomacy tool, as anyone who's worked with Education USA or at the State Department knows how valuable international students are to becoming the students of today, becoming the leaders of tomorrow in their home countries. And the relationships that those, if they have positive interactions with the United States and experiences here in the U.S., that leads to better relations between their countries and our governments in the years to come as they grow in their own countries. So the benefits are certainly there, and they're certainly not limited to financial, and that's the point of this article. But the real benefit, I think, as this article points out, when we talk about the impact having international students from around the world on our campuses to learn about our culture, learn about who we are as people, but also for our students to understand the different perspectives on life, on business, on culture, on race around the world, and how different they are. And that's a perspective that, unless a student does study abroad and beyond just doing a two-week summer program somewhere, but actually experiences life abroad for a period of time, they don't have that sense of there are other places that are different from us and think differently and act differently. And how we, when our students have that perspective of how different life is elsewhere, they really grow in their appreciation of our place in the world and our role in the world. And that's an important differentiator that often gets minimized when we talk about the value of international education, certainly to politicians, but certainly those that have studied abroad themselves get it, and they're probably much more receptive to it. So underlying everything we're talking about today is that element of fighting the good fight and being advocates for our profession, for why we have value for this country, for the world. And that's something that cannot be underestimated, and one that I encourage all my friends who are in the field that if you aren't already regularly in touch with your congresspeople and governors and fighting for what we believe in international education, certainly in defending our right to exist as a profession. It's sad that we may be even getting to that point at our institutions, that the value that we bring to our schools, to our communities, to our country. And that's something that can't be underestimated. So being advocates is important and must be one part of our lives, our professions, that, yeah, we're not getting paid for that, but it's important to do it's the right thing to do. And I really hope all of us can take away at least that knowing from everything that's coming down the pike. I had one of my colleagues who's normally very positive sharing on Twitter this morning that he's normally optimistic, but he's feeling really down about the state of our profession right now based on what seems to be the walls caving in around us. But it is like a hurricane in that there's a wake of destruction that's happened as a result of this pandemic, on top of all the other things that were already happening in our governments related to immigration and things international. And this is something that I think the after effects are going to be felt for months, if not years, to come. But it's about finding the good and taking the time to reflect and hopefully innovate in terms of how we approach what we do and how we look at overseas markets and how we think about recruitment and how we identify places and people that we need to be connecting with to improve the way we do what we do. So it's a long, tough fight, and again, no easy answers, but we're going to be talking about those answers over the weeks and months to come, and encourage you all to continue to join us as we progress through our day-to-day. So thank you all for joining me this week, and looking forward to catching up with each of you in the weeks and months to come, virtually or otherwise. Until then, have a wonderful day.